I know from the prayers that are prayed here that the men who have children are concerned about training them in such a way that they will want to do right, they will live right. And I know that thought is shared by their wives, the mother of those children. And even those who may not lead in the prayer, I know if you love your children, you're very concerned that you can train them in the way that you will not be ashamed of them. You know, if your child is three, in 10 years, your child will be 13. Now what? If your child is eight, in 10 years, your child will be 18. Will they be respectful? Will they be obedient? Will they be stubborn? Will they be a problem? Will they bring you joy? Will they bring you heartache? They are free moral agents, but you can have an influence on their outcome. And so, with such a tremendous task ahead of you as a parent, we have a number of grandparents here who also influence their grandchildren. We don't want to get this wrong. We need the right kind of guidance. Where do you turn? Everyone in this audience who has any respect for the Bible is probably in your heart saying, well, the Bible, which is correct. What part of the Bible? All of it, of course, will provide information that can be helpful. But there is one book that is especially adapted to providing people with practical, everyday wisdom about the things they do and face. And that includes the responsibility of being a parent. You know that that is the book of Proverbs. Look at Proverbs chapter 1. As the writer introduces his book, he said, to verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity. In our dealing with our fellow man, we want to conduct ourselves in righteousness and justice and equity. Is that less true as a parent? As you struggle each day to make a decision about your children, is this a time for discipline? Is this a time for mercy? How far should my discipline go? What should I do to discipline my child? You want righteousness and justice and equity. The writer said, and of course you see this in the Proverbs of Solomon, who was not only the wisest man on the earth because God gave him the wisdom, but also empowered by the Holy Spirit to write the things that he wrote. And then he said, verse 4, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. Those of you who are young parents can't appreciate right now what I'm going to say. When you get older, like Wally is, you wonder why sometimes God gave children to young parents. Because you look back when you were young, you just didn't know what you know now. And yet, you also see the wisdom in that. But the thing is, when you're young, it's your first go-round. Especially if this is your first child. Now what do? You don't. There's no going back and redoing. It's now or never. Look what he said, to give to the youth knowledge and discretion. The youth in the Bible, as you know, is not necessarily talking about a teenager. Talk about young men and women, marriageable age with responsibilities. And he said in verse 4, the first line, to give prudence to the naive. You may be reading a version that says simple. And it's not talking about simple in the sense of lacking intelligence. It's simply uninformed about whatever facet of life is in view. Okay, so you've got this first child. Never did this before. Maybe you have a second child. Problem is, second child is different from the first child. And if you have a third one, that one may be different too. So you need some instruction. He said, that's what I'm writing this book for. And these, Solomon didn't write all of these proverbs, but he collected them. They were collected, that is. And they're all there in your Bible for that kind of instruction that we need in all facets of our life, including being parents. Verse 5. You say, well, I think I'm getting a pretty good handle on it. Okay, look at verse 5. A wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. So it doesn't make any difference what level you are. If you've had 10 kids, you say, I got pretty good experience. Make a difference. There's still value in studying Proverbs. If you're a grandparent or a great-grandparent, I think we have a few of those here, they can benefit from the book of Proverbs as well. Look at chapter 2. What do you pray? I've got a pretty good idea just from listening to fellas up here pray that you pray for the wisdom to train your children right. In verse 3, he says, if you cry for discernment, lift up your voice for understanding. If you seek for her as silver and search for her as hidden treasure. And I just imagine that's what you do when it comes to training your children. But how does God answer that prayer? How do you get that wisdom? Does he, if you get a good night's rest, does he zap you with it? And the next morning you got your answers? Look at the text. He said, verse 1, my son, if you will receive my word, and treasure my commandments within you. Make your ear attentive to wisdom. Where do you get it? That's what this is written for. And so, the crying for discernment and seeking her as silver is somebody that realizes the value right here. And look at verse 6. For the Lord gives wisdom. Where does he give it? It's right here in this book. And so he said, the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. And so verse 9, then you cry for it, you search, hear my words, hear my commandments. Verse 9, then you'll discern righteousness and justice and equity in every good course, for wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. So for the next few minutes, we're going to select some verses from the Proverbs. Obviously, we cannot be exhaustive. There's no way. A short lesson. But maybe some things that will be of help. And we're going to use chapter 22, verse 15, as our beginning text. I know that this is a verse many of you have read. I've heard you talk about it. Maybe you think the writer of the book knew your child. But I assure you, those of us who've raised children have faced this very issue. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will remove it far from him. This term is bound up. It suggests the idea that your job may not be easy. That there may be some stubbornness with your child. And every child's different. We learned that with our three. And those of you who've had multiple children have probably experienced the same thing. What I'm saying is it's not necessarily going to be an easy task. It may be an enjoyable task overall, but it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And you can't be lax. You can't get discouraged. You can't give up. It's not your job to turn it over to somebody else. It's your job to drive that foolishness from their heart, to separate them from it. They're bound to it. It's your job to separate them from it. That's your job as a parent. And certainly as a grandparent, we can contribute our influence. If we do not do that, look at chapter 27 and verse 22. If we are not attentive and if we are not diligent. Proverbs 27:22 says, though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. A mortar was like a bowl, and they'd put the grain in it with like a rod, for example, that crushed that grain. So you put the fool in there, and you pound, and you pound, and you pound, and you pound. Don't do any good. You don't want to reach that point with your children. And so, as a discerning, attentive parent, you pay attention to what you can do to separate your child from foolishness. Over in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24, he who withholds his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Unless I'm mistaken, this is not that love you feel. When that newborn baby, you first put your eyes on it, you want to hug it, you die for it. That's not this. This is the love that says to that 1-year-old or 2-year-old or 5-year-old, I love you dearly, but this is going to hurt. I don't want to do what I've got to do, but I'm going to do it because I love you. It's that caring love that overrides emotions and feelings. And if you don't do it, you act like somebody that hates their son because you are signing their death warrant. What about this word rod? Literally, it's like a stick or branch or some hard object. We live in a society that we've got to be so careful about corporal punishment because our society is so turned upside down. There's been so much abuse from people misinterpreting and misapplying this that parents could be in trouble with the law for corporal discipline. Is this really corporal discipline, the rod? Is he talking about a spanking, for example? And Job, hold your finger here. Look at Job 37. Job 37 in verse 13. I think probably the Bible you're using, even if it's not the New American Standard, will translate this particular word like this one does. I checked several versions. But the New American Standard says, whether for correction, it's that word, correction, I'm looking at, or for his world, or for loving kindness, he causes it to happen. Now, if you're reading the New American Standard, there's a little number beside the word correction, and over in the margin, it'll tell you literally it's rod, and it's the same word as over in Proverbs 13. So it is clear that the word can be used figuratively. I am not denying that. For correction or punishment, that idea. Furthermore, if you look at Proverbs 13:24, the parallel, you know that the book of Proverbs is written by a poetic feature called parallelism, where you have one line, another line, parallel in thought. And the parallel word to rod is disciplines. Withholding the rod is put in opposition to disciplining him diligently. So you know that the rod here is not used simply as an action of anger, whatever it may be. If that's all that it is, just an outburst of anger. I'm not saying you can't discipline in anger. But I'm saying if that's all it is, a vent, a frustration, a whimsical thing, or a cultural thing, that's not this. That's why it's come into such disrepute, because it's been used that way by parents who are out of control and untaught. But it certainly refers to the idea of correction and discipline. And the discipline that is encouraged in this book of wisdom does not exclude, it does not rule out corporal punishment. Look at chapter 23. Verse 13. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. You will strike him with the rod and rescue his soul from Sheol. I think it's pretty clear, isn't it, that striking him with the rod is not time out. It's not taking his iPhone away. That's not going to make him think he's going to die. Whatever this is, the kid thinks this is bad news. And those of us who are older in this audience and raised children in years gone by understand what this is talking about and experience it even from our parents. But the book of Proverbs, written long before us, allows for the fact that there may be times that this is necessary. Look in chapter 26 and verse 3. You have three things mentioned, all of them external objects to control something. Look at it. A whip is for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, a rod for the back of fools. And so it certainly seems to me, at least, that the word rod, while it can be used figuratively to refer simply to correction or discipline, can also include corporal punishment of some sort. In the 29th chapter of the book of Proverbs, and in verse 15, very interesting passage along this line. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. So there's two things there. It's not just reproof. Evidently, the rod is something in addition to the warnings, the solemn instruction that a parent may give a child. So forget the child training books and forget the government instruction. Get this book out. Let it guide you as a parent. Let it give you wisdom as a parent. When you think your child is stubborn and they won't listen and they need to be separated from their foolishness, let this book guide you. You don't want to get to be 40, 50, 60 years old and say, oh, well, I bought the wrong book. I listened to the wrong counsel. You don't want that to happen. Okay? Now, our verse that we started with in 22:15 says foolishness is bound to the heart of a child. So it's your job to separate them from foolishness. Well, it's important then that I understand what that writer meant by foolishness. You know, a two-year-old will be pretty foolish. They'll make foolish faces. They'll do foolish things. Things that doesn't make any sense. They're just children. That's not what he's talking about. Nothing wrong with a two-year-old acting in that sense like a two-year-old. We shouldn't expect a two-year-old to act like a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old or 18-year-old or a one-year-old to act like a 20-year-old. So foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. But what does he mean by foolishness? It's interesting to go through this book and see how these collections of Proverbs use that word. And then you're not depending on a commentary or grandpa or grandma. You're just looking at the book itself and see what the word, the book tells you. It's putting in the category of foolishness, the way a fool acts. That's the kind of things that you as a parent want to separate your children from. So let's look at some of those verses that help define for us what foolishness is according to this child-rearing manual given to us by the Holy Spirit. In chapter 10 and verse 18, he who conceals hatred has lying lips. He who spreads slander is a fool. Now, slander is a purposeful misrepresentation of someone. What if it's a brother doing it to a sister, or a sister doing it to a brother, or a child doing it to their mother or daddy? What if a child says to a mother or daddy who's doing everything they can to train that child in the right way, and that child says, "You're mean. You don't love me." What is that? What are you to do as a parent? When are you to start? Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. It's up to you. Say, "This won't happen again. And I'm going to make it so unpleasant, you're going to get the understanding. I don't care if you are mad." That kind of speech and conduct is not allowed. Now he said, he who conceals hatred has lying lips. I'm not certain whether he's talking about the fact that the person lies about the person they're slandering. That may be. That is slander. It could also be that he's talking about he lies about his own slander. He denies it and denies his motives. Whoever admits, "Oh yeah, I know it's not true." Who admits that? And your little sweet darling may be that lying slanderer. And it's your job to do something about it. And so, don't make the mistake that, "Well, that's just the way they are." Well, change them. That's your job. In chapter 10 and verse 23, doing wickedness is like sport to a fool. Here's the word fool again. They make things that are wrong like a game, maybe a challenge. Ha ha. Make them understand it's not going to be a game. It's serious business. And whatever the wickedness may be, that you're going to separate them from it, and you're going to make them understand that this is very important in your household. In chapter 12 and verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. We read these verses and we think of a person who's 30 years old, maybe, or 50 years old. Why wouldn't it apply to a 15-year-old or a 10-year-old? The seeds of foolishness are already sprouting. It's time for you as a parent, while they're young, 5 years old, whatever it may be, you see the seeds sprouting, root them up. And they won't listen. Don't ignore it. You know, it's interesting, parents. I think sometimes children are smarter than parents. Now, son, don't do that. They know that one really don't count. Now, son, I told you don't do that. Now, son, if you do that again, or they say, "Oh, yeah, it's the third time." That kind of getting serious now. Wait a minute. Why does it have to take number three? And sometimes number three doesn't mean anything. And so here's what a fool does. He does what he wants to do. He don't want to listen to counsel. He wants to do it, he does it. The fool of the book of Proverbs is self-confident. And of course, children think they know all the answers, especially when they're teenagers. But he said, the wise man listens to counsel, and the parent will try to separate them from this foolish attitude. In chapter 13, verse 19, desire realized is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to fools to turn away from evil. Again, the stubbornness that says they're going to keep on doing what they were doing. It's distasteful for them to change, to turn away from. What's your job as a parent? Give up? Give in? It's your job to outlast them, folks. We were blessed. Should we put quotes around that? To have a couple stubborn children. You got to teach them who's going to win the battle. That's your job as a parent. In chapter 15, verse 5, a fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. Put with that verse, verse 20, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son despises his mother. In other words, they have no respect for their parents. You remember that verse we read earlier in our study in chapter 13, 24? If you don't remember it, go back over there again and look at it. The man that loves his son disciplines him. Is that what the verse says? No. Says disciplines him diligently. Do you want to work beside at your job somebody who's not diligent? Who sometimes they pay attention, sometimes they don't pay attention? You know, that could be dangerous depending on what kind of job you have. And so here's a parent. I say, now, little Johnny, don't run. And then they go over and they get to talking to people. Go to people's house and I say, little Susie, you let that stuff over there alone. Now, that doesn't belong to you. And then they go visit and drink coffee and forget about little Susie. Disciplines him diligently. It's your job as a parent to be diligent to see that. As a father or a mother, they respect what you say. And if you told them, let that alone, let it alone. We knew a family in another state. And they were good people. But you go to their house, everything was 3 foot up on the wall. So their kids couldn't reach it. What? What's wrong with saying to your children, I'm your daddy, I'm your mother, I'm telling you, it's right there on that table, you don't touch it. It's your job to separate them from foolish. They want to do their own thing. And they may test the waters and see how far they can go in not respecting what you say. That's when you are challenged to do your work. Chapter 15, verse 14, the mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly. So there's one attitude, person striving to learn. The other one wants to tell you everything they know, and they don't know anything. And that's the way sometimes a child is. Instead of listening to what you say, they want to talk. You can look at the countenance of your child and find out if they're listening, can't you? You know, you're talking, their eyes are over there and over there, and they're wondering, when are you going to get through? What's your job as a parent? What they're saying is, I'd rather talk than listen to you. It's your job as a parent to separate them from that foolishness. In chapter 18, in verse 6, a fool's lips bring strife and his mouth calls for blows. Young children can learn real quickly what stirs a a brew, what aggravates people, that gets a fight going. Ha ha, it's fun. It's your job to stop that. You may have one of your children that likes to get the other sibling in that kind of situation. Foolishness is bound to the heart of a child. It's your job to drive it far from them. In chapter 20, verse 3, keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will quarrel. You allow your children to engage in quarrel with you? I don't mean you don't listen to them. Certainly you listen. It's especially as they get older, to get their viewpoint, to try to be understanding. But you're the parent. Say, I want to be a friend. No, be a parent. Be a counselor. That'll be the best friendship you can have. And they want to quarrel? Don't let it happen. Foolishness is bound to the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. In chapter 26, at verse 11, like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool that repeats his folly. He just keeps doing it. What are you going to do about it? Man, I've worked on this time and time again. Listen, young parents in this audience, let me assure you of one thing. I know why Steve's preaching that, because we've got these kids here. I've had to take mine out. That's why he's preaching that. Or mine's been a problem. And he said, no, sir, we're so glad to have all these children here. I'll tell you what. If you want to know somebody who has some experience in this, talk to my wife. We lived in Oklahoma. She wore out the carpet going back and forth with one of our children. But she didn't give up. And she didn't have my help. I'm up here preaching. And so, I could tell you other stories about our kids growing up, when these kind of challenges were made. But so could Wally. So could some of these other people here. But this is foolishness according to the Proverbs. They'll repeat it. Don't quit. Don't give in to that. Chapter 29 and verse 11. The fool always loses his temper. What do you do now? They lose their temper. They get mad. Maybe they scream. You know, little kids. When are you going to start stopping this, folks? I see parents. I'm talking about another incident, not here, for example. Good people. Little kids, I'm talking about little kids learn early to express their displeasure. There's one thing called crying. There's another thing called squealing and shrieking just because you're mad. And there's parents that just let their kids shriek and squeal. And you ever been in Walmart somewhere, or a store, and some kid going down the aisle, and they got them in the buggy, and they're just squealing at the top of their lungs, and poor old parents, they don't pay any mind. Of course, everybody else is holding their ears. That's okay. They may be all right when that kid's a year old or 2 years old. What about when they're 15? And they get mad and don't like what's going on. Now what are you going to do? And so here, 29:11, a fool always loses his temper. I can remember as a teenager one time I came in, I don't remember what it was even about. And I was angry about something. Threw a little conniption fit. You know, it didn't take my dad but one time to straighten all that out. And I'm not saying he spanked me, I don't think he did, but he made it clear that this was not going to be acceptable behavior. I got the message. So anyway, here's forget that. I mean, that doesn't mean anything, does it? That's my personal experience. But this you've got right here in your text, in your parent manual, as to what foolishness is and what's your job in regard to that. How does God feel about this? What's God's attitude about parents and their responsibilities and controlling their children and training them? And when does it stop? Obviously, when your child's 2 years old or 5 years old, it's maybe different than when they're 15 years old. And when they're 15 and then 18, maybe 20, if you hadn't been able to get rid of them yet, it might be a little different. What about when they're 30? Obviously, your approach is different. Your control is not near the same. But this is an interesting story in 1 Samuel chapter 2. It's about Eli and his two boys. You reckon Eli loved his boys? It says in verse 22, Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons were doing to all Israel, how they lay with the women who served at the doorway of the tent of meeting. And he said to them, "Why do you do such things, the evil things I hear from all these people? No, my sons, the report is not good which I hear from the Lord's people circulating." Now, boys, you shouldn't do that. Isn't that great? He talked to them. So what else could he do? He's old. They're grown men. Over in chapter 3, God said through Samuel, verse 13, "I have told him that I'm about to judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew, because his sons brought a curse on themselves, and he did not rebuke them." I just read it, where he talked to them. I know what else he could have done. He was a judge. He could have removed them. He could have had them punished. Your own blood? Yes. Problem is, sometimes we put our children above God. And that was the problem with Eli, that he put his boys before his honor for God. And so you'll have to decide what to do with your 15-year-old or your 18-year-old. Or if your children are grown and they're 25 or 30 and they're exhibiting the characteristics of foolishness. But just remember the story of Eli. What can you do? That you better do. Because someday you'll answer to the God who gave you those children and put them in your care and gave you the responsibility to separate them from their foolishness and train them in the right way. I think it's probably appropriate. I know it is. Any time to preach on parent-child relationship is very appropriate here with all the young parents we have. And I think it's probably appropriate that we do it again in the near future. But I hope that what we've studied tonight from God's Word will at least provoke thinking and point parents in the direction of a safe and sure guide. Whether you agree with every application I made or not, you know that this is the guide. We were simply trying to provoke thought. We encourage you to take the book of Proverbs. Just go through and look up the word fool and folly and foolishness. And it'll give you some insight as to what your responsibility is as a parent in using the rod of correction to drive it far from them.